Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Flip up. Then cook and roll a whole halftime. Hit him with a chopper, breathe it last time. Flatline. Beat the block down when I turn up the Alpine. Smoke a 3-5, sell a halftime at halftime. Cook, it's halftime.
Halftime?
Halftime. Quick. Keep a little steel by my belt line. Definitely you with an outline. If it ain't, you'll only see me at halftime.
Welcome to the Get In Podcast, presented by Fourth and Dude. Brought to you by EagleInsider.com and Armchair Media. Season 4, Virginia Tech Week. The Eagles clawed their way to a massive victory in Chestnut Hill on Saturday night, taking down the Pitt Panthers by a score of 31-30 in an overtime thriller. BC improves to 3-1 on the year, 2-1 in conference, and currently sits in a tie for 5th place in the ACC standings. On today's episode, we'll recap a wild Saturday night, bring back a special edition of Halfleyus Corpus, and preview the upcoming showdown versus the Hokies under the lights in Blacksburg this weekend.
Matt, it's hard to not feel really good about this team, that game, and really the direction of the program after what we saw on Saturday night. You got to feel for Pitt fans right off the bat. Mm-hmm. That was one of the most BC losses, you know, of all time, with the miraculous, you know, comeback field goal and then obviously the missed extra point. I should say one of the most historical BC losses of all time, because clearly things have changed on the Heights. The turnaround that Jeff Hafley has made, not only in what we're seeing on the field, but just the way that we're winning games, you know, is really quite special. And I think we clearly all know at this point that we, you know, have a winner on our hands. Big show today. Before we get into all of it, quick word from our presenting sponsor, Bet Online. Matt, the wait is finally over. Another triple header of fun is upon us this week. The NFL is in full effect. College football is in full effect. We've got many teams strutting their stuff early, and we also have the MLB playoffs in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still get in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season, from game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Matt, again, let's just get right into it. It was one of the more stress-inducing at the time, but in hindsight, one of the more fun Saturdays, you know, we've had watching this team in a long time. And, you know, frankly, I think you could go back through our previous 10 coaching regimes, and if you play that game under those circumstances, I don't think we win any of them. So to pull that game out the way we did, the half magic is just real, and I don't know what else you can really say at this point.
Yeah, no question. I think, and everyone said this, but I think we lose this game 10 times out of 10 under my boy Steve Addazio. There's no question. There's something different about this team under Hafley. We got a different juice. Like you said, if there are any Pitt fans listening, you know, we feel your pain. That's an ugly way to lose. We've been there, you know, the number of times, and you go all the way back to the Duke game when we were, what, sophomores? And then, you know, to Penn State in 2014, obviously, and then the entire Daz era, we were, what, 30% from you know, extra point.
That sounds about right, yep.
So we feel you guys' pain, but with that said, we're turning a new leaf over, we're moving on, and we can't lose right now. So let's get into the game a little bit. It was a back-and-forth game to start out. We get the ball after we stop them on 5 or 6 plays. Jerko puts a nice 12-play, 86-yard drive together. We hit a couple big plays to Hunter Long and C.J. Lewis, and the Eagles get a field goal. We're up 3-0. Pitt gets the ball. R.D. forces a big stop, except not so fast. We jump off sides on a 4th-and-8 at midfield. Pitt goes for it, gets it, drives down the field for a touchdown. From there, it was you know, surprising to me, it was an offensive game. The offense, you know, trade scores. Jerko found Zay for that big play in single coverage for a 44-yard TD. Pickett fires back with, there was a couple of questionable pass interference calls. They get into the red zone. That sets up that halfback screen for 6 points. And then Jericho caps off a methodical 13-play, 75-yard drive with that grown man quarterback sneak on fourth and goal. And the Eagles go into half, up 17-14. Matt, what were your halftime thoughts? I think, you know, at least I was expecting a low-scoring kind of a dogfight. And the first half lived up to the hype from that standpoint. But a lot more offense than I originally anticipated, I'll tell you what.
Matt, I'll tell you what, it was hard, I think, to not feel good about where we were when we came into halftime. Really with the reason being...
It's more like halftime, Matt.
Matt, it is more like halftime. And I think that's, you know, a really salient point with what we've seen out of this head coach through the first three games so far. Every game, we have been a different team in the second half. We've been a little slow to start. So to come in only down, we're down three at the half. We'd scored last. We were getting, up three at the half. We were getting the ball back to start the second half. And I think, you know, if you put us in that position against a team that, you know, at minimum we're peers with, if not, you know, better than, that's a game that we're going to end up winning, you know, 99% of the time, which fortunately for us proved to be true. But again, it's a different feeling this year. And I know we keep harping on it, but to be in these positions where we feel confident and we feel like we're going to win games, even if things aren't going our way, or if we're in a dogfight versus before, we needed, you know, as much of a cushion as we possibly could have, because we knew at all times that, you know, someone was going to storm back against us in the third and fourth quarter. So not only just changing the way that we're seeing things on the field, but halfway has just changed the culture and the mindset of our fan base, which is pretty remarkable only four games in.
Yeah, 100%. And, I don't know if you recall, but I had prognosticated a final score of 18-13.
Yep.
And so the 17-14 first half was already there points wise. I did think, with that said, I did think the D was playing pretty well. Yeah, they shot themselves in the foot a couple times with penalties. And obviously that offsides that prolonged what became that touchdown drive for Pitt was a killer. But otherwise, I thought that front seven was really attacking and making Pickett uncomfortable, while the D-backs did a really good job keeping everything in front of them. Offensively, it was kind of ugly, right? A lot of negative plays on first and second down, and then Jericho just makes it happen on third and long. I think he prefers third and long to any other down. And, you know, we keep saying, how sustainable is this? But we're four games in and it's working, so maybe it is. So the Eagles start the second half with a bang as Pitt inexplicably lets Zay Flowers get loose again one-on-one downfield. BC takes a 24-14 lead on the second play of the half, and we are feeling good in the Adirondacks, folks. Unfortunately, that would be the last points that the Eagles would put up in the game, at least in regulation. And so Pitt gets back into it. They score one more time to cut the lead to 24-21 late in the third. We have a DeBerry interception in the Pitt red zone, followed by an immediate Jericho strip sack at the start of the fourth. You know, obviously a big missed opportunity there, but I guess no harm, no foul. Fast forwarding midway through the fourth, Pitt gets the ball at BC's 45. The defense forces a ginormous turnover on downs, and the Eagles get the ball back. I'm thinking it's game over. Let's just move the sticks a few times and we can call it a day. Instead, we go three and out. Pitt drives down the field and hits a 58 freaking yard field goal to force overtime.
Well, by the way, you're neglecting the fact that we had the, 15 yard sack on third down there, mm-hmm. to make it 58 yarders. Yep. They were comfortably in this guy's range at, you know, 40 or whatever. That was one of the all time backbreaking moments, you know, that you could possibly even think up, because we were on cloud nine when he had that sack. We thought the game was over. And then for him to, you know, just nail it. Like it wasn't even a question of it hooked in. It was from the jump. It had enough distance from like 80. It looked like that was really painful. And frankly, the exact opposite of how I think we felt approaching the end of last week's game, where we said, you know, if we could have converted that 2-point conversion, I think everyone in the world would have felt really good about our chances in overtime. The way we were playing, the way we were moving the ball, the way our defense had shut down Pitt's offense UNC's offense for basically the entire second half. Mm-hmm. It was the exact opposite. Last Saturday, I thought for sure once it went through, the way how anemic our offense really looked in the second half, our defense was really strong for the third quarter, but they started to, you know, get some things moving. Pitt did in the fourth quarter, and just with the momentum, you know, on its own, I thought that we were in big trouble. Mm-hmm. So not to spoil, you know, the rest of the game recap that you're going to go through here, but let me just say I ended the night much happier than I expected I would have like 15 minutes prior.
Yeah, hopefully we're not spoiling anything at this point. I'm sure most of you guys have seen the game, but it's an important point, Matt, and I was saving that for my dude of the week, Max Richardson, because if he didn't nail that 58-yarder, that sack would go down in BC lore as one
game
of the,
winning, you know, right?
One of the top game-winning defensive plays, you know, in recent history, right? Instead, it's
right up
it's
there just, with the Kuechly strip fumble in overtime against Wake Forest, parents' weekend of, I believe, our sophomore year.
There you go. Absolutely. That's a throwback, huh?
Yeah, a little bit, huh?
Yeah. And instead, you know, obviously they hit the 58-yarder, they force overtime. And then, so we get the ball first in OT. We do absolutely nothing on first and second down. And then Jerko does what he does on third and 10. Finds Zay for his third touchdown of the game in the back of the end zone. Pitt gets the ball. They sort of have an adventure of a possession. They convert twice on fourth down. I think it was like a 12-play drive or something ridiculous like that, which you don't often see, you know, in overtime from the 25. They finally find the end zone. And then the same Alex Kessman that made the 58-yarder misses the extra point, and the Eagles walk off with an improbable victory, folks.
So apparently that's kind of his thing, I've heard, at least, you know, kind of looking at Reddit CFB and other Pitt Twitter, that it sounds like they were in no way, shape, or form surprised that he, you know, bombed a 60-yarder and then missed the extra point. So again, just really want to reiterate how empathetic we are towards Pitt fans, because I can put ourselves 100% in their shoes. We literally lived this 100 times in the Spaz and Adazio years, so nowhere right there with you folks.
Yeah, it's funny. I liken the whole field goal kicking special teams in general to basketball, where it's kind of like, I know, it's kind of a mental game, right? You get hot and then you're in the zone, and then sometimes you can't hit the broad side of the barn. And for me, and this means nothing, but I have a much better three-point percentage from deep, like Steph Curry land, than I do in the mid-range, because I'm expected to make the mid-range. But no one, like, if I'm playing with house money, if I make
who expects you, not to catch up, who expects you to make the mid-range, just to be clear?
Well, Pete, the people that are watching, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of hoops down in Philly.
Okay.
Just on the streets. And yeah, it's, you know. So anyway, so point
okay,
being,
that's fine.
My mid-range game needs work, and that's kind of the equivalent of
the extra
points.
I feel like layups
points
would be a better comparison.
But yeah, I can't really make those either.
Okay. That's fair.
But I'm lethal from downtown is my point. So much like Kessman on the 58-yarders. All right, let's keep this moving.
Well, real quick, just I do want to have one more note on that. Can you give a quick recap of your three-point contest? So there was, I think, 2013, Conti Forum held a big three-point contest, and the winner got to, like, do a three-point contest at halftime of a BC basketball game. Matt had been hyping himself up all week. He was like, this is the time I get to show my skills. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk just briefly about what your final results were in the Power Gym kind of satellite contest?
Well, you know what had happened, Matt, was I had done a workout that day, so
okay,
my arms
yep
were very sore. So I don't remember. I probably hit half of them around in that range,
just
Matt.
Definitely not. Okay.
What's more important, I think no one's talking about, is back in, I think, eighth grade, I actually came in third place in a statewide three-point contest. So,
wow. No one
I
is talking
t-shirt,
about that.
A t-shirt to prove it. So, yeah, I'm pretty lethal from long range. I want to make sure that, you know, we that's known. That
I think
when you
we
think
can write that down. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go back to football here just briefly,
sure,
Matt, if we can. What do you have on the half full, half empty side of the table?
Yeah, so I think the all-encompassing theme of this segment, I think the game itself was very half full and half empty. I think when you really look at it, this was far from a perfect game. We played incredibly sloppy. That's the half empty side, but we still won, which obviously is half full. So I'm just going to run through a couple of you know, missed opportunities. You obviously talked about the interception, the DeBerry interception, followed by the Jerko strip sack. And, you know, to make that even worse in terms of a you know, missed opportunity was, I think, the play before that. Zay missed, you know, basically just dropped a wide open touchdown pass. Now, I want to be very clear that we're not in any way being hard on Zay, because as we'll get to in a minute, he's like the best player, offensive player we've maybe ever had, which is saying something. But a free 7 points right there that ended up, you know, turning into nothing a play later. Settled for field goals early. You know, we talked about this last week, but that's kind of something that needs to change. When we get in the red zone and we get especially, you know, inside of like five, you know, 15, 10 yards, that has to be seven. Like, we just can't keep letting points on the board. We've kind of skated by so far. If we had some against UNC, I think that's one that we win. But, you know, we can't kind of survive on that forever. But, you know, overall, again, despite these errors and despite the defense not looking great, you know, in the first half as much, we let Pickett get free a couple times. To still be able to find a way to fight through and win that game, the glass could not be more half full, if we're just being honest. It's so impressive, the, you know, guts and the grit that these guys showed to kind of stick in this and keep fighting when everything really looked poor. And it did for a lot of the night, or at least, you know, late in the evening. They gave up, you know, they had a 10-point lead that vanished. For them to stick with this and fight through and get a win is so refreshing. As a fan of this program, and I don't know how, again, you can't walk away just feeling so happy about the direction and you know, optimistic about where this program is heading.
Yeah, no question. And red zone, we'll talk about it, but, you know, when we go up against these high scoring offenses, like we do next week and like we did a couple weeks ago against UNC, And Half said this too. We just have to be better in the red zone. We're currently 8 out of 17 when it comes to touchdown percentage. So that's not a math major, Matt, but that's less than half.
Agreed.
So got to convert there. What I do think that means is we're a better team than what we're currently showing, right? That's kind of one of those random things, much like turnovers, that if you can clean those up, then yeah, you start to live up to your expectations or your potential a little bit. So, you know, we'll twist that around. That's a positive.
And by the way, man, and on that exact same note, I mean, if you want to talk about like the penalties as well, right? Mm-hmm. Like we gave them that first touchdown when we jumped on a 4th and 8 and they went forward and converted. It's these little things, and it's the mental mistakes. There was a couple false starts and a couple offsides. If we can clean those up and we can get a little bit more efficient in the red zone, not even, you know, that much more efficient, this is it already is a really good team. This is a very, very, very good team.
Yeah, and Half said that too. He said, you know, it never should have come down to that extra point. We should have won that game by a couple possessions when you talk about the penalty, when you talk about the missed opportunities they left out there. And so I like that mindset. You know, it's he's going to be hard on the guys that have, and he said this too, you know, I don't mind the physical penalties where we're being over-aggressive on defense, but, you know, the mental lapses, and we're not going to name names, but you can't jump offsides there. No matter what you do, as long as you know, just let's get the ball back and let's go back down the field. You know, you're not going to block
unless you're in an all out pump block, right? Like that's right. The only time where we're bringing, you know, 15 guys are coming at the ball at once. We've brought in a couple coaches and we're giving everything we got. Unless that's your game plan, you need to just sit back and relax. What does it do to get you in there, you know, potentially half a second earlier if you're not in, you know, really going for the pump block?
Fair. And in his defense, Tate Haynes did have to come in later and made a huge play.
Yep.
I think it was a huge PBU that was, you know, we really needed it. So, you know, he did make up for it, but, you know, we got to be smarter than that, obviously. We'll talk defense in a second, but I do just want to expound on your Jerko point, you know, specifically that fumble. I think it just is what it is between, you know, the turnovers and the sacks that he took. He took another 4, I think, sacks it was. I think we just need to accept it at this point. Jerko, he's going to take his time back there. He's going to dance around the pocket. He's going to take a bunch of huge hits. Maybe he's going to turn the ball over once or twice a game. But it's all worth it because when it comes together, when he has time and allows Zay or Hunter Long to get separation, you can't defend it. When it comes together, it's beautiful. So it's sort of like we can be mad at it and we can say get rid of the ball faster. But at the same time, you know, if he just gets a millisecond more, it turns into a game-changing play. So it's sort of... It's definitely a shift coming from, you know, AB used to lock on to one receiver, it seemed like last year, would get rid of the ball quickly, even when he had time. This is sort of the opposite where, you know, Jerko has way less time, but he just doesn't care. Guy loves contact, and he's just fearless in there. And that's not a characteristic that comes around an awful lot, and I think that's a big reason why he's obviously getting the Big Ben comparisons, but I think it's also a big reason why he's going to be, you know, he's looking, I don't want to overstate this 4 games in, but he's looking like he could be a top NFL pick someday. So I think we'll live with that for now. Obviously, we'd love to improve it. We'd love to cut down on the sacks. And, you know, we're certainly concerned that he's going to take a big hit and not bounce back up like he keeps doing. But it's just, it is what it is at this point. And we'll take the bad if it comes with the really, really, really good that seems to happen a few times a game.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the other thing I do want to note on Jerko is I do think, despite a collapsing pocket, which is something that needs to get straightened out. This line just needs to figure it out. And we know how talented they are. We say this every week. They will figure it out. I do have a lot of confidence in that. But despite a collapsing pocket, he does still have a really good pocket presence. And you'll see this if you watch him, like especially on his blind side. He's really good. And I know the fumble is obviously a terrible example of that. But historically, he's really good at stepping up when he feels the pressure. Mm-hmm. He'll take 3 steps. He'll feel a guy coming, and he steps up, and he buys himself another, you know, 3 seconds to find someone open, which is, I would imagine, as someone who's never played quarterback, a very, very, very difficult skill. It's obviously a loud, you know, game down there. You don't exactly hear a guy running up behind you necessarily, but he has that. Again, he's got a lot of intangibles. Even, you know, to get in on the, you know, goal line sneak on 4th down, it takes a lot of heart, I think, to do a lot of the stuff that he's done. It takes some of the hits he's done and gotten back up. So, you know, we were obviously excited about him coming into the year, but at least for me, he's completely exceeded even my expectations, and we're only, you know, 4 games in, and he's got, what, another 3 years here. So couldn't be more excited about what we have with him so far.
Right. And specific to the O-line, too, you know, we're going to put that again in the half-empty category, right? But I do think we have to level set and understand Pitt's game plan. I mean, they kept those linebackers and those safeties continue to creep up. And they were in that box all day.
And it's also, by the way, one of the best defensive lines that we're going to go against all year, too.
Exactly right. And these guys said, you know what? We like our secondary. We think we can take these guys one-on-one downfield. It turned out they couldn't because they severely underestimated what Zay Flowers could do when you get him downfield one-on-one. But the big reason that we couldn't get much going either in the run game or really defend that well in the passing game is because these guys sold out. And it's going to be interesting, and we'll get into Virginia Tech, but it's going to be interesting to see what they do because now it's on film. You can't leave Zay Flowers. You got to drop guys back into coverage. And to date, we haven't proved that we have a running game. And I think that's something that if we do figure it out, if they do. The other thing too, Matt, is, and I'm not a huge X's and O's guy, but we played a lot of 12 personnel last year with two tight ends on the field. We now have one tight end, but he's really a receiver. He's going up for passes. We have a couple backup tight ends that get in there. They're not great blockers. We had Jake Burt, who's now a New England Patriot. We had Cora Bedrizi in there. They were helping out quite a bit. So that when defenders did stack eight in the box, they could help out. And, I think it's just a different philosophy under Cignetti, and I think we need to start to understand that. I think the O-line's getting a lot of hate, and, I know we've been sort of leading the charge a little bit because we think it's maybe just as simple as a shift back to man blocking, and I don't know if that's the case. I'm sure there's more intricacies than that, but, we do have to understand that we're going to take whatever the defense gives us, and if that's Zay wide open downfield, then we're going to go with that.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really fair point that probably doesn't get talked enough about. It is, the Adazio style, which was obviously a very, frankly, boring offensive style, but in and of itself, it brings a lot of guys in that are there to block. So there's definitely a lot more bodies in the field. Matt, I've got a couple other half full, half empties here. I'm just going to run through these ones quicker. So half full, the jersey matchup was absolutely phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I love our white throwbacks. Those are my favorite jerseys I've ever seen. I like them more than the maroons. I like them more than anything else we've ever worn. Absolutely spectacular. And the Pitt ones are phenomenal. So those two on each other were excellent.
I hate to say Pitt might have the best jerseys.
Pitts
those
are
throwbacks
sick.
Are just disgusting.
Absolutely sick.
In a good way for our older listeners. That's a good thing.
Exactly.
Those are sick.
The half empty here, Matt, and this is just a minor thing. That game and all of it would have looked so much cooler if at midfield we had our throwback logo. The italicized 90s BC or early 2000s BC logo just didn't really fit with the aesthetic. So that's a minor one. A couple others from the broadcast itself, half empty. The guy who is running the yellow line needs to be fired and needs to be fired tomorrow. On the fourth down that they converted, Pitt converted in overtime, according to the yellow line, he was short by two yards. It was not even close. If you remember, Matt, when that happened and we saw him get tackled, we were running around the house we were going insane because we said, all right, this game's over. Great. Come to, and hey, it's first down on the 3-yard line. What just happened there? So that was a disaster. And I hate to do this, but Mark Herzlich is not a guy I want calling BC games anymore.
Matt, he had cancer.
I love him. I love his story. I love what he did for Boston College. But he is a terrible... And I think a part of it is he's probably trying to not be a homer, which is a hard thing to do. If you and I were to call this game for ESPN, it would be a disaster because we would just exclusively talk about how – it would be incredible, but it would be like Jack Edwards. And you can't really do that on ESPN. So I understand that he's trying to call it fair, but he was very tough to listen to. It seemed like he was openly rooting for Pitt. Which is unfortunate. So a lot of just missteps there. Did not enjoy him at all, and wish him obviously the best in his broadcasting career, and hopes he becomes the next Howard Cosell, just not on BC games. That's kind of all I'm asking for. And then lastly, Matt, on the broadcast note, the ACC Network stream literally cut out for us as Jerko was dropping back, and it came to when Zay Flowers was in the end zone six seconds into the third quarter. So really, again, normally we're in a market that has that on cable, but really feel for all of our Boston listeners who are stuck with streaming the ACC Network, because there's just a lot of headaches with things when they come over the air versus coming over cable. So again, I know we have a lot of games on the ACC Network, so something to keep an eye on there. Matt, that's about all I had.
One more related half empty, that the ball boys on the Kessman 58-yard field goal.
Yep.
Did you see the replay of that? I forget if we noticed it in real time.
No, I noticed it. But they're Pitt guys.
Okay, but why are the Pitt guys... First of all, that's not how that works.
Yes, it is.
Is it?
Yeah, kick, especially kicking, because they got...
Are you kidding me?
You remember all this from... Yeah, go ahead.
If you guys saw the view from the kicker's perspective, right, into the end zone, you have Matt and I, our cutouts in the background. But right in front of that You have the ball boy that's going absolutely bonkers when Kespin hits the 58-yarder. I don't care how – I meant to send Jason Baum an email about this. How do you let that clown show happen in our house? I mean, that's completely unacceptable.
I think that's not on
You don't bring your own ball boys. It's not in
COVID times. Yes,
not
you
do. COVID times, man.
Yes. Well, then even better. They need to be using pit balls. They can't be using BC balls. That is. I'm gonna knock you on that. But I am going to turn that into a half full. We tweeted about it earlier in the season before we even knew where we were sitting that – our dumb faces and our, you know, you're wearing the helmet, I'm wearing the crop top, was going to be enough at some point to throw a kicker off their game. And sure enough, four games in, we win the game. I don't want to say we, because I really don't want to give all of us, you know, us all the credit, but us standing literally right behind the uprights and this guy shanks an extra point. You just have to think that that might have creeped in a little bit. So half full on that side of things. Anything totally else you have from glass, either half full or half empty side of things?
Matt, we skipped over probably the biggest half fall.
Yeah.
But you have to give a shout out to this secondary and really the defense as a whole. But what this secondary did on Saturday was nothing short of incredible. And we're banged up back there. We got Deion Jones out. We had Mike Palmer went out, I think, in the second quarter there. We had a bunch of guys that were banged up. And for these guys, you know, it's really led by the cornerbacks and Brandon Sebastian and Josh DeBerry. These guys have turned into absolutely elite players. Sebastian had 6 PBUs in one game, which has to be a record. DeBerry was all over the field making huge plays. And Pitt, I know they're not known as an offensive powerhouse, but Pickett was what, the second leading passer in the country? Something
like that. Yeah, he was scary. He was scary.
And he went into Eric Dungy mode. Like Pickett was playing really, really well. They have, you know, weapons at wide receiver and they have a solid line. And that's, you know, a fine offense. And, you know, I'm really proud of what those guys did. And they were the reason that we won the game. You know, DeBerry, we talked about that pick. I mean, that has Jeff Hafley written all over it. The way that he jumped the route and sort of finished off the route for the receiver and wound up in the exact right spot. I mean, you know that coach, you know, pretty much laid that out in film. And, you know, the fact that these guys are executing such a high level, that really bodes well. And, you know, we saw last year what happens when, you know, you can be exposed, especially on the back four. And the fact that these guys are playing at such an elite level just a year later, it really speaks volumes to what Half's done. So I do want to give those guys a shout out. Those were the MVP of the game, specifically Sebastian, which he was, especially in that fourth quarter,
was
elite.
Yep. Love to see that out of Central Connecticut, guys. That's again, we're just athletes. We are just raised as athletes in that part of the country. So really glad he's kind of continuing on my legacy.
And you saw what Mark Whipple, who's a UMass guy, right? You
amazing saw he, that he is still kicking around, by the way.
But he had to adjust the entire game plan because even though it was one-on-one, you know, for the most part downfield, he couldn't get anything going. So the plays they did hit on were either design runs for Pickett or these gimmicky, you know, screen passes. They had to adjust their entire game plan because nothing was available, you know, downfield. So I think that's huge, and we're going to need it because we're about to play some elite receivers the next 3 to 4 weeks here. So, you know, love to see that, and they're only going to get better as the Hafley effect continues to take shape.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Do you want to pivot now into Dude of the Week? What are you looking for here?
Yeah, let's do that. And you already hit on mine, Sax Richardson. Yep. Between him and McDuffie, who I think it is every week. But again, that sack at the end of the fourth, that should have been like a memorialized play that you know, we remember forever.
I was shocked when they even trotted out the kicker. I was like, at this point, you have to, you know, throw it, right? You got to throw it 30 yards?
Yep. Yeah, 100%. We'll definitely need those guys to step.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset, hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Up again. You know, obviously we're going to face Khalil Herbert, who ran all over us last year, and Virginia Tech's offense has been pretty good to date. So those two linebackers in the middle of the field absolutely have to step up.
So I have the obvious pick for my dude of the week. You got to go with Zay. This guy is just an absolute monster week in and week out. And we have not had, and you know, I know we've had some great offensive players come in. We have not had nearly as explosive as a player as Zay Flowers in a very, very, very long time, frankly, if ever. Added another 162 yards and three touchdowns to his total on Saturday. This guy is borderline uncoverable. And while I'm sure we've had great athletes who can get open in the past, maybe it's just the fact that we now have a you know, quarterback who can reliably hit them, and that's certainly not shade at anyone who's come before him. But the combination of Jerko and Zay is absolutely unreal. Zay was nominated for the National Best Wide Receiver Award, which Politico. I don't think we've had anyone. That's a hard one to say, so I was going to defer to you on that. We haven't had anyone even sniff that in forever. So this guy is an absolute joy to watch. And I tell you what, it's fun to have an offense that is at least has the ability to be high powered. And again, we can now storm back in any game that we might fall behind in because of threats, like Zay Flowers.
No question. Agree 100%. And he's on track. And I just had to correct the ACC network that's putting out some fraudulent statistics.
Yep.
But he's averaging over 100 yards receiving per game. So if you normalize that in a 12 game season, he'd have over 1200, which would be a Boston College record. I think Amadon is in the 1200 range, but that would be, he'd be in the mix if we had a full season. He might do it anyway, but yeah, storyline to watch.
Yeah. As a math guy, I can definitely confirm that. I think that segues into your Eagles in the Wild, does it not?
Yeah, it sure does, Matt. Zay Flowers, the reason for his production, it came out this past week that he's been working out with Antonio Brown and Geno Smith, which, get this, Matt, I have a Geno Smith joke. That explains Zay's jaw-dropping numbers thus far.
Oh, I see.
Shout out to any Jets fans that are listening. Yeah. That's a joke about when Geno Smith got punched in the jaw and broke his jaw.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Matt, thanks.
So for my Eagles in the Wild, I'm going off of the football field and really out of the athletics arena entirely. Okay. Everyone knows I'm a big math guy. Feel like this deserves to get more shine. I know this story broke like 6 months ago, but it's been back in the news of late. Lisa Piccirillo, BC math major, class of 2013, solved the Conway knot problem, which is like a decades old unsolvable math problem. And, you know, here comes Lisa 7 years out of college and just solves it in everyone's face. That's just big time. And that's just what Boston College math majors do. You know, some of us seem to be applying their what they've learned in the math arena a little bit more than others. But I think there were literally like less than 8 Bachelor of Science graduates of math in the class of 2013. I was one. Lisa was one. So clearly that's a track for success. I'll just say that much. So absolutely love to see that. The BC math department doesn't get enough shine. But shout out to all my guys in there. Try to think who I'm not even going to try to name professors.
Yeah, you did go to class a lot, Matt.
Renny Marolo.
He's the only one that comes to mind. Remy ate my lunch for calc.
Yeah, I can't think of any other one else names off the top of my head. Renny Marolo is like more of a unique name. But overall, again, just love to see the math department doing great things. So shout out
this,
Lisa,
Matt.
Excellent
Let
stuff.
Let me ask you this. I'm a big Goodwill Hunting guy, you know that, and you know the whole nine, right? What does that, solving the Conway knot, what does that do for society? Like, how does that advance us forward? What happens next? Can we apply that to any type of science? Is that really a cure for COVID? Or does it matter whatsoever?
Well, again, to quote the show Num3RS with David Krumholtz, we all use math every day. So these math things that we solve, you know, we'll have far-reaching implications that you or I, frankly, can't even comprehend. So this absolutely is going to move things forward. And you know what? It is just like Goodwill Hunting, honestly.
Yeah.
So you love to see it.
I feel like you didn't answer the question.
Nope.
Great. All right. So I have one more Eagles in the Wild here. Jared Dudley recently went on the Bill Simmons podcast. And if you guys know anything about the Fourth and Dude perspective on the Hoops program, it is that we needed a change yesterday being 4 years ago. Dudley basically went on the show and he had a great quote about coming back to BC. He said, "I'm going to do the NBA thing. He's going to be a coach, GM." And then, quote, "I'm going to go back to BC, going to clean all that up, need to have my donors, need to get those facilities."
That's big
time. So it's on the radar, and it goes without saying that, you know, if we had Dudley strolling the sidelines, we would be in a much better shape, and we'd be probably making tournaments every year, and that's all we want. So shout out to Jay Duds for winning the championship. And we'll see what happens. Hopefully it's sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that would be such a welcome sight to get Dudley on the sidelines or in at least some advisory role at Boston College. The guy is just an excellent, excellent basketball mind, and really happy for him that he finally got his name on the Larry O'Brien. I know they don't actually put their name on it like the Stanley Cup, but I feel like the idea follows. Matt, are you ready to head into the courtroom here?
I'll tell you what, Matt. It's been a while since we've been in the courtroom. We've had a lot of, you know, sort of business to take care of, and I'm excited to get back in. Matt, let's do it. Halfley's Corpus is now in session.
Matt, before we get into the courtroom, a quick word again from our sponsors. So just to remind everyone about BetOnline and all of the great sign-up bonuses and bets that they offer. NFL is in full swing. College football is in full swing. MLB playoffs are in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still get in on all of the action at BetOnline. They're going the extra mile to make sure you have every bet available to you. Spreads, totals, team, player, coaching, props. They give you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. And Matt, they are back again. Our friends at Manscaped here to sponsor this week's Halfleyus Corpus. Big news in the Manscaped world, Matt. They have released a new Manscaped product. Manscaped just released the Weed Whacker nose and ear hair trimmer. Take a look in the mirror, and I guarantee you'll see hair sticking out of those holes. It's time to keep your ear and nose looking as nice as your fellas down low. They are changing the grooming game forever with this Weed Whacker. This nose and ear trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which we all love, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. The premium Manscaped Weed Whacker uses a 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotary dual-blade system. That sounds like an airplane engine. This is awesome. Its intelligently contoured design enhances the trimming experience, and it is waterproof, which makes for easy operation and cleaning. The only nose hair trimmer on the market with a powerful and rechargeable lithium-ion battery that lasts for up to 90 minutes of use. Have you ever pulled your nose hair out with your fingers? That might hurt more than anything other Manscaped accidents you could possibly have. So Manscaped is here to make whacking your weeds a time to look forward to and deliver you maximum confidence. Yes, you will get a replaceable blade every 3 months to keep your weed whacking time clean and enjoyable. It's time to upgrade your Manscaped routine with Weed Whacker. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code armchair at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code armchair. What are you waiting for? Go whack your weeds. Matt, I can't think of a better segue. Let's get into the courtroom.
All right, so we are approximately four games into everyone's season, and the ACC contenders versus pretenders are starting to take shape. You're down to three teams that are undefeated in conference, and it is the usual suspects. It is Clemson, UNC, and Notre Dame. We'll call that tier one for now, Matt, right? There's not much of an argument to be made. Clemson's obviously going to win. They're going to go undefeated, more than likely, except for us. And then UNC and Notre Dame are probably just a tier below that. I think we could say that all those guys, as of now, are contenders. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think overall that's fair. I hate Notre Dame so much, and I really can't wait till we play them. But yeah, to be fair, they've absolutely looked very good so far.
So then you have the next tier with one-loss teams. You have Boston College. You have Miami. You have Virginia Tech. You have NC State. And you have Georgia Tech, which I don't think a lot of us saw coming. So I'll get into a little of my analysis here, Matt. I don't know if you saw the game against for Miami versus Clemson, but it was pretty much over by the third quarter, right?
Right.
And it's funny, Miami, they had a couple of wins over Florida State and Louisville early on, back when Louisville was ranked, and everyone sort of jumped on the bandwagon. And, you know, to me, obviously they have that quarterback, but it's still that same program from last year. And, you know, I don't trust that defense. I don't think the defense is nearly as good as everyone, you know, makes it out to be. And I think outside of the quarterback, who's very dynamic, they got a lot of holes to plug. So, you know, I see them as not necessarily frauds, but, you know, they don't scare me a lot. If we were to go head to head with them, you know, I'd give us a chance. So, you know, I think they're in that tier, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens the next few games.
Yeah, man, I think that's a really fair tort that you bring up there.
Yeah.
And I feel like in general, really out of those one-loss teams, I personally just see it as us and Virginia Tech, and obviously we'll see how that looks on Saturday. Mm-hmm. But I'm with you. Georgia Tech, who we do play in a couple weeks, doesn't really scare me. Miami, who we'll probably never get to play this year. I see it's very unlikely that we both make it to the ACC championship at this point. They don't really scare me. And then NC State goes without saying that I could not be less afraid of a team than I am of the NC State Wolfpack. You can write that one down. But, you know, Virginia Tech, look, we're obviously going to get more into it in a minute. I still don't really know what to make of them. I don't want to spoil all of our preview talk. But
Matt, get this.
Yep.
You want to talk about the defense resting? Virginia Tech's defense rested a lot against UNC last week.
Yep, that's a really good point, Matt. But, you know, at the bottom line, and to bring it back to UNC as well, all of these things can't be true, right? UNC can't be a top five team, and Virginia Tech's a 23 team, but we're, you know, whatever it'd be in the you know, 31 range or whatever if you count the receiving votes. It's either UNC is really good and they're a top five team and we hung with them, so we're also, you know, by definition a good team, or, you know, we're a middle of the pack, you know, 30-ish ranked team, and UNC should be nowhere near the top five. And then on the other side, UNC massacred Virginia Tech last week. And I know the final score was only like 10 points, but that game was never close.
Yeah,
and they're still ranked.
It was a 5-point game at one point, but agree
with
us.
But these three teams don't really make sense the way that they're all laid out right now. So I don't know if I would call any of them necessarily frauds, but I have someone is fraudulent in the voter process, and I don't know what we want to bring, you know, charge wise against them, but it feels very, very dirty to me.
Yeah, I don't put a lot of, you're talking AP poll, right, as far as ranked. I put no stock into that whatsoever at this point, only because we don't have the full population of teams and we're still going based off preseason ranking. So I don't even worry about that. I you know, the standings, I think, sort of landed where I thought they would, with the exception of Georgia Tech, who I do think are frauds. And it's too bad because I actually like Jeff Collins a lot. But they, I didn't know this till I looked this up, they lost to Syracuse by 17. That's a clear fraudulent statistic. You want to talk Sarbanes-Hathaway? I mean, Georgia Tech are frauds. They have Clemson this coming week and then us. So I expect them to drop out of the discussion, if they're even in the discussion. I expect them not to be there at the end. I also want to talk about NC State, because NC State kind of worries me, not because I think they're good, but because they escaped with that win over Pitt the other weekend. They escaped with a win over Wake a few weeks ago. And here's the deal with them. They play absolutely nobody. They must know someone in the ACC commissioner's office, because they have the easiest possible schedule. They miss Clemson. They miss Notre Dame. They miss us. All they have to do is beat one of UNC and Miami, and they pretty much lock up a two-loss season.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I don't think NC State's good, but I do think they have a pretty good shot of being there at the end only because their schedule's so weak.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Anything else you want to touch on in the ACC or you know, should we go around the country quickly and then get to Virginia Tech?
Yeah, I don't think we need to talk about the rest of the ACC.
I agree. I think that there's no sense of talking about.
It's mostly what we expected out of, you know, the likes of Cuse and Wake and Duke. I guess Louisville is obviously a huge surprise. I mean, the defense is just so bad that they got smoked by Georgia Tech. And then Florida State, both of those, you know, both Louisville and Florida State are sitting 0-3 in conference, which I didn't see coming for Louisville. You know, I saw that Florida State was overhyped. I think we both saw that coming, but not to this degree. I mean, they look terrible. So, of course, we missed Florida State this year, and what would have been an automatic win.
Just kills me, yeah.
They're cruising for a bruising next year when we play them. Hopefully COVID's back to normal. And although here's the other thing too, and I don't want to go off on a tangent, but I do love this no division thing. I mean, the fact that we're looking at the ACC as a whole and saying, all right, all we got to do is finish in second place as opposed to, hey, we got to beat Clemson and then go undefeated. Like, that's not fun. I'm not having fun in the Atlantic anymore. Let's get rid of the divisions and let's play for second until Clemson comes back down to earth.
Well, we'll still play for first, but yes, I agree. You know, more reasonably, we can play for top two. I agree. Matt, only other thing I want to do in the courtroom is I want to charge the entire Southeastern Conference with reckless and wanton behavior. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we know that's the part of the country that has been taking COVID the least seriously. And the chickens, Matt, have come home to roost. Mm-hmm. So Nick Saban, who is, by the way, taking it very seriously, he was a big proponent of masks, which is hard to do in Alabama, has finally contracted the virus. So thoughts and prayers to him. Hopefully he recovers quickly. And it is interesting to see what a coach not being on the sideline does to the line. The game's still on, but they're playing Georgia this weekend. And I think it immediately shifted like 3 points once they said Saban's not going to be in the building. And then still in that conference, Dan Mullen down at Florida, you know, was complaining in his press conference about how he wants to see the swamp full, even though, by the way, watching those games, they look very full, despite whatever numbers they're throwing at us. Mm-hmm. He was saying we need 90,000 people, we need a loud environment, and like, boom, the next day, like, the entire team has COVID and their game against LSU was canceled. So, you know, it is a little bit of a reap what you sow here, and you really just wish that I think they took this to the same level that teams like BC, Virginia, you know, even Notre Dame, despite their flare-ups, have taken this. And I think we'd have a much, you know, cleaner college football season. You know, you're seeing it in the NFL right now. There's just so much uncertainty, and you kind of just need everyone rowing the boat the same direction. And when you get, you know, some marquee programs and some marquee areas kind of going against that, it really throws the rest of the season in jeopardy. So I want to charge them with a lot of different things, but I feel like reckless behavior, is that a crime? But I want to charge them with that.
Yeah, it feels like a real tort there, Matt. Good tort.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I mean, with Saban in particular, it's sort of like Belichick, where he controls everything, and no one sneezes on that sideline unless Saban says it's, you know, it's okay to do so. So, yeah, I think it's obviously going to have a massive effect, and you know, even with Virginia Tech, we've seen it. It's affected their team. I think Fuente tested positive at one point. So
yeah, they've like all had it. I think at worst they had like 20 guys sitting out because of it, and maybe some positive tests, but also then some kind of contract tracing. But I think for now they're relatively back to healthy.
More so than they have been. But I think the takeaway here is, again, and I'm sure Jay Baum will tweet it out tomorrow, not to jinx it, but, you know, another 1,000 tests and, you know, no more positives from BC. So it continues to be a testament how good of a job BC is doing, you know, especially in light of what we're seeing down south and otherwise. So hopefully the boys keep up the good work and, you know, stay healthy and, you know, go from there.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think this was a really productive courtroom segment here. I think we got a lot of legal briefs kind of off of our desk that have been kind of piling up over the last couple of weeks. So good
absolutely.
Work.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Court is adjourned. And Matt, let's talk Virginia Tech. We got about 15 minutes of show left. I'll let you kick it off. Kind of what are your high level thoughts? I've got some feedback on the weather and other ideas on that side of it, but I'll let
you
kind of give
it. Do you have any
hokey
thoughts or is it just weather thoughts?
I've got a couple hokey thoughts.
Okay.
But I'll let you kick things off.
Okay. That sounds good. All right. So Virginia Tech comes in as the 23rd ranked team in the country. They have a record of 2-1, with wins over NC State and Duke before they got absolutely demolished by UNC last weekend. If you believe in the transitive property, like we do on this show, they beat Duke by 7, whereas we beat Duke by 20. And then they lost to UNC by 11, while we only lost by 4. I don't know what that means, Matt, but it's certainly a data point that we need to consider. Obviously, we've beaten them each of the last 2 years. We had a nice streak going, including 2018. That was the game that resulted in us getting game day versus Clemson. And then in the opener, we had a big win last year as well. Since that time, speaking of the opener, both teams have become sort of the direct opposite of the matchup we saw last year. Obviously, our team, as everyone knows, has done a complete 180 when you talk about the defense, and now we have a passing game, plus the lack of run game. You know, we're a completely different unit. But it's different for Virginia Tech as well, as their offense to date has been predicated on running the football. They're averaging 300 rush yards per game, which is top three in the country, only behind the academies, Air Force, and Army. So, you know, that's a big change for what we've seen. Obviously, I think it was Ryan Willis last year was their quarterback that was really slinging it around, and they got nothing going on the ground. In this run game, it's largely due to the offensive line that they built that is extremely solid. They have a left tackle that we'll talk about in a second. They got a couple key transfers, one being Khalil Herbert, who is equivalent to Diamond Ferry around these parts. BC fans remember him from last year. He transferred from Kansas, where he put up 187 yards on just 11 carries and ruined. It was one of the worst Friday nights of my lifetime. What a disaster. He's been tearing it up so far this year. He has 449 yards and 5 touchdowns through 3 games, averaging a ridiculous 10.4 yards per carry. And this is a little premature, but he's getting Heisman hype at this point. So,
I mean, is it? I don't even know if that's that premature. The guy is literally a video game, and mm-hmm. I know maybe on the yardage side, it's because a lot of other teams haven't played. But when we heard that he transferred from Kansas to Virginia Tech, that was like terrible news, because this is now all of a sudden like, all right, fine. This guy torched us last year. He ruined Matt's Friday night. I mean, ruined everyone's Friday night, but you actually made the trip up there, which made your Friday night even worse. But
I was having a great day up to that point. I you remember, Matt, I drove up Thursday night. I got a bunch of koozies from you. I made a pit stop in New York.
Yep.
I think I played golf that morning, had a great tailgate, hung out with Martin Jarmond. Everything was great. It was a beautiful day. And then the game happened. And then I remember just, you know, walking to the sail loft at till 3 a.m. and just drowning my sorrows. What an awful night that was. But anyway.
Non sequitur. Best clam chowder in Boston at the sail loft.
Yeah, underrated. Agreed.
Really, really, really good. But yeah, I thought he was out of our life forever, Khalil Herbert. And then, of course, he's like, no, I'm going to be a Hokie. And now we have to play him, you know, every year. I don't know how old he is or how many more years he has. Is he a grad transfer?
I don't know how it works anymore. It's tough to keep
Likewise.
Up. I hope so, man.
Yeah, but I'll just say this is a game that I am very worried about. Because the way our defense has looked so far this year, I think we've been, you know, very strong in the air. But the run defense is a little bit less tested. And the other thing I'll say is that we've clearly been a kind of a bend but don't break. We've given up a lot of plays, but we've made turnovers when they matter, or we've gotten that big third down stop. That bend but don't break style is a lot harder against a team that can dominate on the ground. Mm-hmm. Because they can pick up 3-4 yards at will. It's a lot harder to get them off the field when they're in a 3rd-and-2 and they can, you know, they know they can run for 3 yards versus, oh, you had 2 incompletions because, you know, 2 great pass breakups and now it's 3rd-and-10 and they gotta, you know, repeat that. So I'm definitely a little bit concerned about our defense's ability to, you know, stack the run game this year, mm-hmm. especially with the offensive line. So ignore just how good Herbert is. They have an excellent offensive line that I know you want to touch on. So from a defensive side of the football, this is, I think, by far the biggest challenge for this defense, certainly not the secondary, but for this defense that we're going to see as a whole this year. And that leaves me a little bit worried going into Saturday.
Yeah, no question. And as if one transfer that killed us last year isn't enough, they also have Raheem Blackshear,
yep.
who you might remember when we went down to Rutgers in Piscataway, Matt. He racked up 130 yards receiving out of the backfield. So he also transferred to Virginia Tech. So,
it's almost like Fuente Style was like, we lost back-to-back years to Boston College. Yep, like, that's unacceptable. Yep. Let's get all the people who are their boogeymen who have massacred them over the last couple of years and put them on our roster. So it's an interesting strategy. Obviously, I don't know. You know, we don't know how it's going to turn out just yet, but at least he's thinking outside of the box, which I guess is a good thing.
Definitely. And then in addition to the running backs, they also have 2 quarterbacks they've used so far, both of whom are big running threats. It sounds like Hendon Hooker's getting the nod. He averages somewhere in the ballpark at 10 carries, around 50 yards per game, at least last year. His first game this season was midway through last week. Fuente's kind of been screwing around with the quarterback situation. They started Braxton Burmeister, who's like a Tyler Murphy type, who just can't throw the ball and just is pretty much just... He seems to only be a run option guy, which seems easy to defend, but what do I know? But Hooker's just been really good. So if Fuente just plays him, it seems like that will do the trick. But like you said, I mean, Hooker can do some damage through the air, and I remember watching the game last year, Vatek versus Virginia, which was basically like the de facto coastal championship, and Hooker was hanging in there with Bryce Perkins, and they kind of had a shootout back and forth. So, you know, he can get it going in the air and with his legs. So, you know, that's a guy to worry about. Obviously, Pickett scrambled away a few times and extended drives, and, you know, Howell did the same. So, you know, to me, it comes down to, you know, do we trust our secondary? And I think we do. But what I really think we have to do is you know, stack the box against these guys and, you know, trust the DBs to make plays. And, you know, we don't want what happened against Kansas last year to happen with Herbert. We can't let that happen. Fortunately, I think we trust Halfley with the tape. And I did like what we did following the UNC game. Obviously, those guys got loose on some outside zone runs. But it seems like we locked down against that, against Pitt. I can think of a couple of situations where Valdez and Brandon Barlow, who, by the way, deserves a shout-out. He played awesome last week. But those DNs did a great job containing the outside. So if those guys can do that, we get Boosie in the middle and then the linebackers everywhere else, I think we can handle it. But it's really going to, you know, we're really going to ask a lot of the D-backs to kind of go at it alone one-on-one and take care of business. So to me, that's the key to the game. It's their very potent offense against what we think is an electric defense. But this is just as much of a test, if not more so, than UNC.
Yeah, I agree. And again, like I said, I'm very interested to see what Half puts together for a game plan, because I think that this is a massive challenge. They can beat us from a lot of different ways. Matt, a couple notes I want to throw in. So first of all, you want to talk about football weather. It is going to be, as of right now, 46 degrees Fahrenheit in Blacksburg at 8 p.m. and getting cooler as the night goes on. I mean, that is like picture perfect fall football weather. This is, I think, the one time
we would have been there. We would have. So we
that was probably our game, right?
Yeah. We had talked about going down to Blacksburg. We always do one road trip, at least one road trip per season. And I've never been to Blacksburg. Always wanted to go. And it seemed like that was the logical choice this year. And it's a shame that we're not going to be there.
Yeah, it absolutely is. But I'll say this is the one time, I think, so far this year that we're actually lucking out or getting a benefit from there being no fans due to COVID. They're not doing fans, right?
They're doing 1,000 fans. It's just, okay. I think, family members.
It's like, yeah. All right. So that's not enough to really make a difference, because I would argue that a Saturday night in Blacksburg, especially when, you know, there's a buzz about Vatek, they're ranked. So I think there's a buzz that automatically comes with that, is one of the most intimidating places to play in college football. When they do enter Sandman, obviously it didn't stop, you know, Matt Ryan and the boys, but in general, that's an impossible place to play. So I think it's huge that this team doesn't have to go up against, you know, a packed Lane Stadium. And again, like I said, I think this is really the first time that we've benefited from that, because if we had fans and alumni for the three games that we had that all really came down to the wire, I mean, that would be like, that building would have been absolutely rocking. You know, who knows if it's enough to put us over the hump against UNC, things like that. But really, really, I think we dodged a major bullet there. And then, Matt, I do want to talk about the line. So it opened at 10.5, plus 10.5 for BC, and I think it's around 12.5 now. I don't understand what is happening in the betting markets and why we continue to be slept on. We were 6-point dogs against Duke. We obviously ran away with that. We were 6-point dogs again against Pitt. Came out, you know, not comfortably on top, but we were the better team, I think. I think the better team won. And then we were, you know, even larger underdogs to UNC and still managed to cover there as well. So I don't understand why the national perspective is still so down on BC when it comes to gambling. And I don't know how much money this team needs to continue to make me, but I think it's going to, you know, basically pay my 2040 tuition bills to Boston College.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And as a betting man, you know, obviously what I really like, and I think the spread is enough that we will cover. I think there's no question these guys are resilient. They're going to fight back no matter what the potential deficit is. So I do think we'll cover. But what I can't stay away from is the money line.
Yeah.
It's plus 330 right now. And I know me, you know, us and our crew already took advantage of it when it opened. We were like, holy crap, this is free money.
Yeah, we thought for sure it would go down.
Yeah, we did. We did. And it didn't. So maybe I'm not done throwing money on the on the line there. But for those that don't know what plus 330 means, it's you bet $100, you win 330. I mean,
you net 330. Yeah, that's important
to
know. You
net 330. Yeah. Exactly. And all we have to do is beat an overrated Virginia Tech team. Like it's like when the lottery gets to a certain point, when the Powerball gets to, you know, 50 million, and it's like, it's actually a bad investment not to go in on it. It's almost, that's where we're at with this money line. You almost have to, it's risk reward here. And I think it's a no brainer.
The Fourth and Dude Coalition has, I will say, several hundred dollars on the BC money line. So there could be a new order of koozies that could be in effect should we, you know, be able to pull off this win on Saturday.
No question. Hey, Matt, we didn't touch on the defense, and I do want to touch on that because they stink.
Yeah.
And everyone that saw UNC put up almost 60 points on them last year, that's not a surprise.
By the way, 60 points pretty effortlessly, right? They pulled the ones, like, at a certain, I mean, that they were not on the gas for the entire four quarters there.
No question. So they're allowing 486 yards per game. They allowed 656 yards to UNC last week. And it's interesting. Like, they have a couple good players. Like, they have Rashard Ashby, who was preseason All-ACC. He had a billion tackles against us last year. They have Devon Diablo, who should be a lot better. His name is, like, the coolest name ever. He should be a lot better, but he's been a solid corner for them, or safety for them, throughout the past couple of years. And he's, you know, he's always played well against us as well. I think he was out for COVID, and really their entire secondary was decimated by COVID. So we'll give him a little bit of an out there. But it just seems like, you know, if our running backs can get loose, get to that second level, these guys just suck at tackling, and they're never in the right spot. And, you know, watching the highlights against UNC, it was effortless. And it's not just last week. I mean, Duke put up 31 points against them, right? We only allowed six to Duke. So I think they're resigned to understand they're going to allow some points, and they know there's going to be a shootout, and it's just going to be one of those games that, you know, it's going to be, in my opinion, whoever has the ball last is going to have a shot at winning this. It's going to be in the 50s. But one other thing to watch out for, they surprisingly do have a good D-line. They're actually fourth in the country in sacks. They average 5 sacks a game. Obviously, that's been a bugaboo for us. They have a couple good DNs that, you know, we have to watch out for that. We have a certain left tackle that's playing out of position that, you know, guys are racking up sacks against them. So, you know, that's something to watch out for. Jericho's going to have to get rid of the football. And be smart with the ball. But, you know, the hope is that these guys sell out for the pass, and we get our run game cooking. That to me is the key. And then on the other side of the ball, it's really got to be the Sax Richardson, Isaiah McDuffie, and the line. The front seven's really got to come to play. The whole unit's got to come to play, but that front seven has to stop the run. And maybe not even stop the run, just slow down the run, right? If they have 200-plus yards rushing, then we're probably in trouble. But just got to make some stops, force some turnovers, and see what happens down in Blacksburg.
Yeah, I hear you. Do you want to just get right into your prediction?
Yeah, let's do it. All right, so this is a revenge game for our defense, like we talked about. Herbert absolutely embarrassed us last year. And like I said, we did make some adjustments after UNC exposed some issues in the run game. So, you know, we should be able to load up the box, trust our D-backs. I like McDuffie and Richardson to get somewhere in the 30-tackle range. Hopefully we hold them under 30. They drop a million guys back in pass coverage. The light bulb finally goes off for our run game. And I got Eagles 35, Hokies 26 in Blacksburg.
Wow, that's low scoring for the Hokies here. I'm gonna go higher on both sides, but I'm with you overall. I really like what this team is doing so far. And if there's one coach in the country that I trust to come up with a game plan to shut down this Hokies attack, it is absolutely Jeff Hafley. We're so lucky to have him on sidelines for this. So I'm with you. I think our offense continues to, you know, put up excellent numbers through the air. So I'm going to go Eagles 38, Hokies 35 in what is a very uncomfortable Saturday night. We don't have fun at all. Like, it's not going to be a fun 3 hours, but I do think we come out of Blacksburg with a 3-game win streak against the Virginia Tech Hokies, which is always fun, and I think that we move to 4-1 on the year.
And by the way, 4-1 with a pretty good, we're not going to look ahead, but a pretty good chance to go to 5-1 with Georgia Tech the following week. And then, you know who's waiting on the other side of that? Clemson.
Yep.
So this is a huge game.
Just saying.
Obviously, we got to get this W first, but it could set up. Yeah, this is really the game of the season as far as I'm concerned. We win this, we get something special. If not, we still probably do, but it'd be a fun one.
Yeah, absolutely, and probably enough to get us ranked, by the way,
if we win,
which doesn't really matter at this point because we're just trying to get, you know, wins and let America sleep on us. I can live with that. But thanks again for listening. I think this was, again, we have a really good team on our hands. Hopefully you guys are enjoying the season as much as we are so far. As always, be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram, @4thanddude. Matt, not to break some news, but the koozies came in today. They look phenomenal.
Hey, Matt.
Be on the lookout.
How do I get one of those koozies?
Be on the lookout for some ways that we're going to try to get them into the hands. Normally, we just take a big bag of them, like a big shopping bag, and we just throw them around at tailgates. Obviously, we don't have that option this year, so we want to make it a little bit more virtual friendly. So, be on the lookout for that. We'll make sure everyone has the ability to try to get in on the action. Keep an eye out for potentially another Halfley Hour on Saturday morning. I think so far that's been going relatively smoothly. We don't have a lot to talk about, but we can see if we can fire that one up again. I don't know your thoughts on that.
I'm busy. We'll make it happen.
We'll try to make something happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks again to our sponsors, all of our sponsors, Eagle Insiders, Armchair, Bet Online, Manscaped, the new Weed Whacker. And thanks again for listening. Folks, it feels like 1940.
Get in, folks.
Just can't love.